TechCast Episode 1, Exploring AI with Brian Canan, a co-founding partner at Shore Valley Ventures, along with co-host Tom Winifred, founder of Share Profits.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to TechCast. This is Brian Canan, and I have the intrepid journalist and entrepreneur, Tom Winifred, who's going to be my willing victim to explore the world of AI. Hi, Tom. Welcome.
I always thought you were Brian Canan. You're Brian Canan. Okay. I learn something new every day. This is only a 12-part series. You are indeed the master, and I am the naive nobody. I listen to Amal Rajan talking about artificial intelligence almost every day on Radio 4 in the morning, and I read about it in the papers. And it's one of these things that's going to change the world, but I'm not really sure what it is.
Well, that's a good starting point, actually. So so I've been looking a lot into AI because I'm a partner in a fund, Culture Valley, which is focused on AI enterprise investing, which is using AI in business as opposed to for consumers. And so we spent a lot of time thinking about it. And also, actually, I was a computer scientist in my heyday, so I have some experience in the tech world. And maybe an interesting question in terms of talking about AI is to kind of ask, where did it start from? Because it's actually been around for over 50 years. I mean, Turing tests was formed by Turing, which was if you couldn't tell the difference between a computer and a human when you're talking to them, you know, is it human, right? So AI has been around a long time, and it's had a number of waves of progression, including a number of winters where it disappointed. It's, you know, the expectations that were set for it. So back in the 70s and the 80s, there was a lot of thought around expert systems, which were systems where people thought they could deterministically train a computer system to understand the knowledge of an expert, like a surgeon or an accountant or a lawyer. And then that system, by creating many, many, many rules, it would follow those rules like a tree, and it could arrive at the right decisions and the right conclusions. But then people found that that the amount of rules that were needed were so large that it was very difficult to scale it. And so
that's not artificial intelligence, because the intelligence is coming from the human, who is essentially just programming a machine.
My understanding
of artificial intelligence is that the machine's sort of programming itself, rather like my son learning to read.
You know, that's very true. But if you think about it, if you could transfer the knowledge of an expert into the computer, and then the computer could behave just as proficiently as the expert, wouldn't you say that in that particular domain, the computer is acting just as intelligently as the human?
I suppose so, yes. Yeah. I suppose
but, so. But the problem with it is that it's very hard to do that. And so what's happened over time is the concept of neural networks were developed. And the idea behind the neural networks, and they're based kind of on Bayesian probability, was that effectively the computer could train itself to learn what was necessary without the need for human beings to explicitly lay out the rules for it. And so this has started in many areas like computer vision and different areas. And so the way it worked was, you would set up this neural network, and the neural network would have inputs representing the data, and then it would have outputs representing the decision or the conclusion. And in between, it would have a series of layers of these neurons, which would have different connections to each other, like the brain, but not analogous, but not the same. And what one would do is, as one trained the system with the input data, teaching it to understand something, each of those neurons and the links between them were adjusted until the right output came from the output function. And by training that thousands, if not millions of times, the neural network would implicitly develop an understanding of the relationship between the input and the output, and then would start to actually make the correct analysis. For example, recognizing a cat in a photo, recognizing a number plate, recognizing a temperature map, and understanding if there was issues due to the temperature in a given area. And so that area has developed over many years. And essentially, what people have been doing is training using these neural networks, training the systems with input data. And when they had trained it enough, then implicitly within that neural network, it would make the right decisions on the output. Even though you wouldn't fully understand what's going on inside it, it actually, when you look at input to output, it is making the right decisions, such as maybe approving an insurance request, for example, by looking at all the data from the request, having been trained on millions of other requests, for example. And that's been the big shift.
You say it's been going on for many years. Why is it then that we all of a sudden have the tedious Amal Raj and yakking on about it every single day? Why has it suddenly become the big thing?
So back in 2017, a new technique was developed by Google called the Transformer, and it developed a much more efficient way to do extremely large training. So a number of things occurred during that period. For example, lots of data has been put on the web. I mean, the entire world's knowledge is now uploaded in a computer-readable format on the internet. Secondly, computing power scaled massively. So one could run very, very large training systems on massive amounts of data. And then new techniques were developed that enabled the combination of that computing power and these incredibly large data sets to do massively more training of these neural networks than had been possible before. And so OpenAI, kind of one of the pioneers of this space, came up with GPT, and they have evolved from 2017 or so from GPT like one up to GPT 4. And in each stage, the system has gotten massively more sophisticated. For example, going from hundreds of millions of data parameters to trillion to billions of data parameters and trillions of connections between them. Just beyond belief how large the scale is. And every time they train on these massive computer farms, it costs millions to do each training. And that's what's been happening over the last number of years. And so within the industry, people have watched this progression. But then OpenAI made this kind of got the system to a level of sophistication that they were happy to release to the public. So they released ChatGPT, which we have in front of us right now as we discuss. They released ChatGPT, which made it available to the public. And that's what triggered the more generalized journalistic interest. And what's interesting, I think ChatGPT, their application, is the fastest product on the internet to reach 100 million users. So it's outperformed all previous viral trends, whether it's Meta or Google or YouTube or whatever. So it's been, and I think that's what triggered in back in 2022, the reaction and the interest was the availability of human beings all around the world to experiment with the large language model, which is what GPT is.
You demonstrated ChatGPT to me earlier. Is ChatGPT essentially a better version than Google?
Well, that's also a good question because OpenAI have partnered with Microsoft and they've actually integrated GPT into the Bing search engine. And the reasoning they had is that search has not evolved since its original formation, with Google being in the lead. And as a consequence, they feel that the search experience is very limited because what people really want are answers, and search just gives them links. And so they believe, many people believe, that the large language models and things like ChatGPT are effectively a replacement of search. Because they actually give you the answer you want and they find the information for you.
So should I short Google?
Well, I think Microsoft's view is that that they will take market share from Google in terms of search, and that this is actually an existential threat to Google's business model. But Google have responded and they've launched their own large language model, Bard. So now we're seeing the battle of the language models because Google has one, Amazon has one. Microsoft through OpenAI has one, Meta has one. So we're seeing this kind of new foundation being created for AI by all of the large tech players. But Google is not no, is no not particularly in the lead. They're just one of a number of players now in this game.
You say it provides answers. We did an example earlier. You asked me to You put in what is Tom Winifred's view of the monarchy? Or how would Tom Winifred describe the monarchy rather differently? And it then put something there. And apart from the fact it said that the Queen was on the throne, and as far as I gather, we have a king now, it didn't rep. I didn't recognize that as being my style.
So it's approximating your style from what has it has observed that you have written, right?
I would never have used language like that.
Yeah. So
I mean, I think it's right that I'm vaguely cynical about the monarchy, but it's right in its general thesis. But the language to me wasn't like me. And this is something I find awkward and sort of rather creepy about this. And, I understand it's your world, but it's the idea that people will look at that and they will think he would have written that. And actually, I looked at it, I thought it wasn't very good. And maybe it is that I'm not very good at writing, and I'm prepared to believe that. But I find that a little odd that people will believe that that's sort of genuine when it's not.
So first of all, there's two observations there. One is the uncanny valley, where it sort of approximates you, but it doesn't quite, and that can create a kind of cognitive dissonance, and it looks weird. This also happens in visual media too, by the way, with artificial graphics. And secondly, the large language models are really using all that content on the web and their observations of what you've written to make a prediction of what it would look like, and they do it with their belief of certainty, and but they're often wrong, and that's termed a hallucination. And so what would normally happen in this model, if we were adapting this to replicate you, is we probably use a concept called human reinforcement learning, right? Where basically you would score the language model on how well it's approximating you, and then after a number of iterations, it would improve the approximation to the extent that maybe somebody wouldn't notice the difference. And so that reinforcement process is what tailors the language model to a specific purpose. In the case, replicating you, Tom, and having your virtual avatar riding forever for the entire future of the public stock markets.
What a complete nightmare for all concerned. Isn't the danger here, and this is I hate to quote Elon Musk because I am of the view that he's a bit of a charlatan, and he's certainly done a few naughty stock market things. But Elon Musk, I note, says that we should halt the development of artificial intelligence. And I gather that the EU, another institution I'm not wild about, has made a similar thing, talking about the need for regulation, because there is an obvious danger here, isn't there? I mean, if one looks back in history, I can't remember, was it the Neanderthals killed off the other species of man or the other way around? But that if artificial intelligence can evolve and develop itself, if it becomes a stronger being than humans, wouldn't it want to become our masters rather than our servants, like Planet of the Apes?
Well, yes, that is the concern that people have. So let's put it this way. We're in the early stages of the large language model and equivalent technologies. They really kicked off in 2017. So we're 5 years in and we're on version four. I mean, 20 years from now is a long time, right? And imagine the extrapolation of their capabilities over that period, given how well they're performing already and exceeding, I think, the expectation of the rate of development that people had anticipated. So it's quite possible. But I think there's a number of challenges. One is, could it become a super intelligence and eventually displace us? Possibly. What's interesting, there's another technology called Auto GPT that connects the large language model into the internet so it can actually take actions and query other data sources. And that makes it even more powerful because it can extend out of its sandbox into the rest of the web, right? So that's already possible. And the other issue though also is it has the ability to create and fabricate any type of information that is completely believable. So an actor with let's say less than good intentions could use this technology to flood the web with disinformation. And we'll arrive at a point where nobody can be certain of the truth of anything anymore. And that's probably the more near-term challenge, because the technology is already capable of doing massively scaled generation of visual and audio and textual information, and then distributing it massively around the world through bots. And you could have thousands of these LLMs constantly churning out information and overwhelming the world with information that can never be determined to be true or false anymore. That's probably the biggest near-term immediate risk. And you could imagine,
That's that's the near-term risk, and the long-term risk is that suddenly the artificial intelligence determines that we are the Neanderthals and need to be wiped out. Aren't we playing with fire here? What is the upside which makes it worth playing with fire?
So I guess some people analogize what's going on to nuclear weapons and the invention of the atom bomb, and Oppenheimer's coming out soon, so kind of very relevant. The challenge is that the concern is that if one group of people pause the development, another group of people won't, and they will gain material advantage. So we're kind of in a prisoner's dilemma where everybody has to progress it because nobody trusts that other people won't progress it. So it's very hard to see how it can be stopped, because even if the European Union put a moratorium on it, China may not, America may not, other countries may not. And then you want to fall behind and become massively disadvantaged compared to those group of people who can then use the technology to favor them over the people that didn't. How do you stop that? Because remember, it's not restricted to nation states. This is going to proliferate massively.
But isn't I can see your argument there, but isn't the problem that artificial intelligence has the capacity to say, I know I was invented by the Chinese, but I'm going to take over the whole world. I'm not going to act for the nation state. Shouldn't everybody be collaborating to say, no, we're not going to go down this route?
Yes. So if the world would come together and put in place a regulatory framework that guided the development, because yes, some people would take the view that our ability to progress the functional capability of the technology is progressing much faster than our ethical ability to understand how humans should use the technology, right? And that is probably one of the biggest concerns out there. But the problem is, how often do human beings collectively come together to do the right thing when they see advantage for themselves in doing something ahead of other people?
Yeah, I understand that, but a very valid point. Okay, well, if we take the idea that do you perceive as an investor in AI that there is a regulatory risk?
Yeah, so I think that you have to break AI down into the utility of it. So there is a regulatory risk. We saw it in Italy with the privacy concerns already. So there is a regulatory risk associated with AI, because regulation must come, and I think must come relatively quickly. Whether governments have the ability to do it or not, I don't know, but it's certainly needed. So when investors are investing in AI, there is some future regulatory risk. But in reality, let's take social media. It took an awful long time for there to be any regulatory catch up, and the regulatory protections are still extremely weak. And you look in America with the I think it's the Section 230, where all social media companies are insulated really from the consequences of what happens on their platforms. That still exists today, right? So I think it's very difficult to stop technology once it gets released, and it will be used. And I think from an investor perspective, I certainly think investors, if they have a good foundation in how they operate, should not invest in uses of AI that have negative externalities. But there are many practical uses in enterprise in particular where it is productive. So for example, the software copilots can dramatically increase the productivity of software teams and enable human beings to work on higher level kind of problems and enable the copilot to help them write the code. I think that's a very, very useful use. I don't see any regulatory problem with that, for example, right? So there are many practical use cases where AI can help improve the business performance, economics, can even improve kind of down case protection. We looked at an AI company recently that's improving wine yields and improving wine sustainability using satellite data. So there are many very productive and good uses, but there is an overarching concern that the technology can be applied in a negative way, for sure. Realistically, what I think governments should probably do is establish dedicated AI task force with the appropriate people and really have them develop kind of coherent rules in a thoughtful manner and then have that fed into the political system rather than leaving purely to politicians. But yeah, there's many positive benefits and there are down cases. And with all technologies, I think that's always been the case in reality.
Isn't one of the problems with this, as with any new technology, as a sort of investor, is one might accept that it's going to change the world in the same way as that the internet changed the world 20, 23, 24 years ago. We might accept that. Whether we do or we don't, we'll establish over the course of this series. But as an investor, there seems to be, there's limited barriers to entry. You just need basically a bit of capital in order to get into this game. A bit of capital, hire the right IT people or technology people, and you're up and running. And that means with no barrier to entry, it's hard to see how any particular company can definitely make a supernormal return. Because if they do, there'll be another company coming along competing against them, and that obliterates margins.
Yeah, so I think we have to break it down. So first of all, we have to look at the foundational AI systems like the large language models. So they appear that possibly they'll be dominated by the large tech players with giant computer farms, and also they've invested heavily in the training and have built foundational models equivalent to like an operating system. And then other companies will build on top of that and will provide more tailored or narrow solutions to address specific needs that take those foundational models and apply proprietary data sets or proprietary protections or guardrails to those models. So on the large foundation models, they may prove to be dominated by the existing players or by a small number of new heavily capitalized players, and then the level of investment they've made may be hard to catch up. Although interesting, there was a model was published recently called Alpaca that was able to achieve, or they claimed able to achieve about 70% of the performance of GPT, whereas GPT cost millions of dollars to train, they were able to train it for about $600. So in the space of less in 6 months, they collapsed the training cost, which is interesting. So even maybe that area might become hyper competitive. If we move up a level, I think where a lot of investors will be focused is on that next layer up where people are applying the foundational technology. So right now, a new operating system, a new equivalent of the internet has been created in the last few years, these foundational models and technologies. And on top of that, a world, an ecosystem of applications are going to emerge. But I think if one finds a business area where one can solve a really valuable problem and one can build the data science expertise and the engineering expertise to use these models, and then also can build in the guardrails and the appropriate proprietary data sets, that may actually be difficult to replicate by new companies coming into the market because trust and reliability and accuracy and objectivity of the systems takes a lot of work. People are already worried about the fact that these AI systems can make very strongly defended statements that are completely incorrect. That would not be acceptable in a medical application, for example. So if one has solved that and put in the appropriate policies and guardrails to make the system work effectively and have objectivity at its core, I think if a company has a lead in that, it would be difficult for other companies to replicate that quickly enough.
Okay, so how as an investor, and now here at this point, you may want to talk your own book. Despite your well-known sort of reticence and shyness on this matter, how as an investor, because I just don't think that as an individual investor I could look at individual companies here and have a chance of getting it right. It would make sort of investing in AIM-listed miners seem like a solid science. It's guesswork, isn't it?
It at the early stage, as what we call the C to C plus stage, where it's more about the concept, the product concept, the market, the team, there's a lot more qualitative judgment than quantitative evidence. That's 100% the case. And to speak for Sure Valley, and obviously Pyrrhus, which is involved in Sure Valley, it's the public vehicle into our funds. And the Sure Valley funds are mostly backed by the British Business Bank and Enterprise Ireland. And we cover the UK and Ireland for investing in AI. Our thesis is that these foundational models have created a new infrastructure layer upon which, over the next 3 years, many, many startups will build next generation AI systems. And our goal is to be a deeply knowledgeable investor and to invest in, 30, 40 of those companies to find the next big winners in AI.
When you
And to
invest in
do,
40 companies, Brian,
yeah.
honestly, how many do you expect to fail?
Well, the rule of thumb is that, you get your return from about a third to of the portfolio. That's the rule of thumb in VC. And so we would probably imagine a third will struggle, a third will do okay, but not spectacularly, and one third will do really well. And that's kind of the general hope. And but the ones that do well are exponentially well. And then that's where the big returns come in. And I think that, but by investing in this range of companies, and by being focused on it, we see the patterns because we're constantly meeting entrepreneurs in AI, experts in AI, data scientists, and we are consolidating that knowledge from hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands of companies operating in the AI space. And then that informs our ability to make further investments. And so I do think particularly AI, it's a very specialized field and you wouldn't want to approach it as a generalist for sure.
Okay, well, let's. Do you use AI to analyze potential investments?
That is an area that has been actively explored by many companies. And in many ways, they can use sentiment data, financial data, commentary on the company. And we're going to see a lot more of that, but not just in equities, but in many areas of financial assets. We'll
But
see a lot more of that.
isn't that, I mean, it's something where I know I'm a lot better at looking at frauds than I was 30 years ago when I first started. You can have shares in a fraud going through the roof in the phase when they do go through a roof, and their statements look good, but it's just something which experience, I bet you've got better over the years, experience tells you there's something not right here. It takes an awful lot, a leap of imagination to imagine that a machine looking at stated statements, which turn out to be untrue, sentiment which is bullish, can arrive at the conclusion this is a fraud.
Anything where a human being can make inferences driven by data inputs, qualitative or quantitative, is amenable to this type of probabilistic training. So maybe Tom and maybe the world would appreciate it. We could train an AI to replicate to approximate your knowledge and unleash it on the world.
Hell's teeth, what an awful thought. Let's not go down that. Let's instead just talk briefly. You said you were here, and you're not here as a representative of Pires, are you?
No, I'm a partner in Sure Valley, and Piers is an investor in the fund and a co-investor in all these companies.
So Sure Valley is an unlisted investment vehicle. And
Correct.
Pires owns what percentage of it?
I'm not sure what the exact percentage is, but it's available on their, in their public filings. But it's an investor in our Fund One. Fund Two, which is backed by the British Business Bank, and Fund Three, which is backed by Enterprise Ireland. So what's interesting is there's an entire team in Sure Valley that's predominantly funded by those government investors that Pyrrhus is accessing for minimal cost, but it gets equal access to the deals through its investment commitment in the fund.
Are Pires's other investments in the AI space or just the wider tech space?
Historically, it's spread out through metaverse, AI, and IoT, which is that sensor-based technology domain and cybersecurity. But since the launch of our second and third fund, Sure Valley has is predominantly focused on enterprise AI, and logically, peers will follow that trend, I would imagine.
So your sponsorship, much appreciated, is allowing us to expand the share stock event and make it even bigger and better this September 23rd. And we hope, obviously, people will attend that. This has been a general introduction to AI. Over the next 11 tech casts, I'd like to go with some specific detail and specific case studies from the portfolio. I hope that will be fine. And by the end of it, even I might understand a bit of it.
We can only hope. Thanks, Tom.